Science app. It's on iTunes, Android, and Windows 8.
And if you're a podcast listener, but you prefer over-the-air radio because radio is the biggest invention since the previous big invention, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, consider letting them know you like the show.
We were around for the invention of the podcast, but not for the invention of radio.
I was.
It's Practical Polly's radio show.
If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Hi, I'm Ruth Moody from the Whalen Jennies, and you're listening to the Station Making Waves, WTFR Dearborn.
The views and opinions expressed on the following pre-recorded show do not necessarily represent those of WHFR or Henry Ford Community College. Good afternoon. This is WHFR Dearborn. You're listening to the show called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. This month, my special guest is Christina Jimenez, and she is a gifted tarot card reader. Welcome to the show, Christina. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, I'm glad you're here, and once again, thank you for being here. Now, how long have you been reading tarot cards?
Well, I'd have to say since probably about 2006, but I think I started getting interested a little bit before that, maybe a year or two before, you know, interest, a little bit of curiosity.
Mm-hmm. And what prompted you to start studying tarot cards?
Actually, it was by accident. And it always, in destiny, those type of things, they say that there are no accidents.
Right, yes. I've heard that often.
And so actually, my mother went to take the class, and for whatever reasons, she needed a ride back or something, and sometimes she would be so involved in listening to every word that was spoken that she didn't get all her notes. So I started taking notes for her, and little by little, I'd say, well, I don't think they meant it that way. I think they meant it this way, and so I started going with her a little bit more and a little more, and then pretty soon, then I would just pick it up. It just seemed so natural. It didn't seem like an effort at all. And mm-hmm. I think maybe that's what, at first I was a little maybe confused that I thought, this is no effort. I don't think I'm doing this right.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no real right way of doing it. But that's where I started off.
Right. Well, sometimes it seems so easy, you think, well, maybe I'm not quite doing it right. It should be harder somehow. Is that what you were thinking?
Exactly. And I would always gesture to the teacher. She said, no, you're pretty much getting it. And the main tool that they always promote is the tool of intuition.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're listening to your intuition, it's like everything else goes by the wayside. And I looked for definitions. I bought all these books for training. And I'd still look at the pictures and say, okay, that doesn't mean that to me at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just voice out. And the teacher would always gesture to me and look at me and say, well, just answer what you're seeing. And I'd answer what I was seeing. And that's when she told me, okay, just keep going with that.
Mm-hmm. So it doesn't necessarily mean that whatever card is drawn, that's what you repeat back to that person. It might be, even though going by some book, it might have a different description of that card. You just go by some intuitive feeling in describing what's going on in that person's life?
Exactly. Sometimes I can be guided by a question. Some people might have questions, and other times I can do a party, say it's a social party where maybe a spouse might get coerced into having the reading and maybe they weren't quite ready for this, so they were a little skeptical. So I'd have to immediately draw a few cards and say, okay, so this is happening with you right now. And they're looking at me like, how did you get that out of this card?
Right.
Okay, so it's really intuitive.
Mm-hmm. So you want to put them at ease so that they can appreciate the fact that, you know, what you're telling them is directed to them and for them, and you're just there to help them.
Exactly. It can be so specific that at one time it was the husband of one of the ladies that was invited to the party, and I started rubbing my jaw, and I said, you have this toothache that you just won't go in for. You think they're going to pull your tooth, but actually you just have a little air pocket, and they just want to put a little filling, not even a full filling, but I don't know what's going on, and I just kept rubbing because I was having that numbing sensation. Usually I don't get that unless it's something really intense.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I think, what makes a believer from all the non-believers that sit down and say, you know, this person's just entertainment. This is just something for fun. And then this is the way it really got him to pay attention and say, mm-hmm. you know, really got to take care of your tooth.
Right. So I'm assuming you were correct in that. He was having a problem?
Yes, he was. And it was, I felt so validated. That's another thing that as readers, we feel really validated when we give it. Sometimes it's almost advice. Mm-hmm. According to the storyline that we're receiving, and we give advice to help that person navigate through whatever it is they're going through. So just it could be something as a toothache, or it could be something more internal, like facing your problems or just trying to shoo it away when you know it's going to have a bigger load to it. But that way the person already will almost immediately be at ease,
mm-hmm.
and that way you can go more into a flow of these storylines of what's happened and happening, and usually that's how things come to me, what's already happened, and I can say, you already know this. This has happened, that has happened, and we're going to continue on. If you have any questions or you'd like to get more in focus with one of those things I've mentioned, you just, by all means, interrupt, and we can go for the, you know, mm-hmm. in that way.
Right. Have you always felt intuitive? I mean, have you always seemed to have some type of psychic ability?
I think at a young age I would see things, but between being plagued with high fevers and things like that, sometimes my mother would say, at that time you did coincidentally have a high fever. And I don't know if it was that, and I was almost lethargic,
yeah,
or something.
Hallucinating,
I don't know.
Right. Or whatever.
And
yeah.
So at times maybe it just didn't seem like it was making sense. But other times my mother would remind me, you did say that, you mentioned that. But it was so randomly off the mark that it didn't seem to make any sense, so she didn't really take too much stock in it.
Mm-hmm.
So at times she would remind me of poignant things that I would have mentioned, or said, you know, I had a dream about this before. And I think that's one thing that all connects us is our dreams. We will always have a dream that we'll say, you know, come in the next day to work or school and say, well, this, does anybody know what this dream means? Because it just stuck with me all night, you know,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing. So.
Right. Well, I think that's true of a lot of people, that if they did pay attention to their dreams, that actually people are more psychic than they give themselves credit for, because if they pay attention to their dreams, sometimes it might tell them what's possibly going to happen in their future or what's going on. Again, it's a lot of symbolic type things going on in dreams. It's hard to really cut to the chase and, you know, pick out the proper meaning. But I do think that with a little experience, you know, people can really help themselves by paying attention to their own dreams. Do you feel that to be true?
I agree with it 100%. At times, it seems like, you know, we can have these really crazy dreams where, you know, I don't know what I ate last night, and I just had these crazy, crazy
that
dreams.
That could be it, yeah.
Right. And then there's other dreams where whether a situation has come to that point or it can completely go to a different way, the main focus that we want to have is what was the dream about and the main content of it. So sometimes it's not going to be exactly the way, you know, when we wake, a situation won't develop exactly the way we dreamt it. But it has to do with our feelings, or maybe we're nervous about that situation and our true feelings. So then we can better deal with that. So if I'm really anxious about this, I can wake up and say, okay, I won't need to be so anxious with this. Mm-hmm. We're just going to let it go and see what happens. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, well, that's destiny.
Right.
So.
Yeah, right. It just depends on, you know, what the situation is, and I guess how you feel about that dream, and that, you know, does it scare you? Does it make you happy? Whatever emotions you're experiencing from that, at least that gives you a hint, like, well, is there something serious coming up? If there's something that you might possibly be worried about when you have this dream, or whatever the case may be. But anyway, moving on. Now, when you read cards and people come up to you, what's the first thing you do?
I usually greet them just so that they're feeling comfortable, and I just ask them if they were interested in knowing what's happened and happening. Usually that is it's going to be the main focus of everything from that point on. And usually I'll say, you know, I'm feeling you're a little anxious, or you just went through a major upheaval and you're still standing. So you have to be happy about that. Usually when you pinpoint and ground what's just happened and happening, then they're more focused to say, yes, this really did happen, or no, or I'm still going through it. And I'll say, oh, in case I see something legal, you had legal issues, you're still worried about it, it's still pending. You know, we know legal issues can last years and years.
Right.
So at this point, this is how you're feeling, but it's to substantiate why you're feeling that way. So you might want to go to your counselor or attorney, whatever, and say, how can I show this is my stance on this, and I want to go further. Once you substantiate their feelings and where they're at, they're more open to, their energy is a lot more open, and we can get to more things deeper, mm-hmm. deeper and deeper.
Mm-hmm. So the more receptive a person is, the easier it is to read for that person?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, what if you, I guess, encounter somebody that really is skeptical, that doesn't believe, like you said, maybe you're at a party, you know, they get dragged over there, they don't really believe in it, they don't think you know what you're doing, whatever the case may be. What do you try to do again to help alleviate the situation?
Well, I usually like to make people really at ease, but also to make the non-believer a believer. You really have to come with something so deep that, say, for instance, this person's worried about their job, that maybe in this economy, in this time.
Yeah, well, who isn't,
right.
Really? I mean, at this, you know,
right.
Juncture.
Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times I can say, you were worried about this. They got rid of that many people. There's only so many positions, and it's almost turning into musical chairs. So are they going to pull the chair out of under me? So I usually get specific on their situation. So usually there's numbers that will call to me. So I'll say there's three positions and there's five people. So it's not the way you think it is. It could be that two of you will change position. You will change shifts. Something will happen. So you have to be open to that. And when you say that you have to be open to that, that fear tends to go away. So we usually think things of traditional, there's three positions, there's five people, two people are going. What if all those people are so talented? And so that's when I say, you know, you're good at this, they're good at that. We need all of these people so that you can be the one to say, how about we go with a different configuration? So then they're more open. And then I have to slam them with something really good and meaty at the beginning so that they feel,
right.
Okay, this lady knows a little something here,
right.
So let's keep going.
Got to grab their attention.
Sure.
That usually helps.
Mm-hmm.
So what if you mention something, though, that they're not really familiar with at that point in their life? Is that something that might be projected into the future that not even they are aware of yet?
Oh, yes. I've had some very interesting predictions that I found them to be vague because they didn't know what the situation was. Mm-hmm. Therefore, for example, there was a man that had no children. Excuse me. Had no children, only child, didn't have a girlfriend, nothing. He was a single guy, young man, adult man. I said, there's this young man that's in a lot of trouble around you. And we couldn't pinpoint it. So I went on with the reading, but this little story kept, like, nagging me. So I'd go back to the story, and I said, don't you have any nephews, nieces, neighbors, this? I went through every gamut of a young person that could be around him. And he said, no. Finally, he came back to me. And sometimes I won't get that answer till maybe way later. It could be even years. Mm-hmm. And it was a few months, and he said, you know, it was a neighbor, and he was the one in trouble, and the cops came to pick him up, and he lived very close to me. And I'd always say hello to him, and so the cops came and, you know, rang my bell and asked me for information on him. But mm-hmm. sometimes it's something that's nagging at, as a reader, you find the storyline to keep popping up. So it's like a dog digging, looking for that bone,
right.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
You get that intuition, and sometimes it won't mean anything to them. And they can even leave from the reading and say, well, I don't know what she was talking about.
Yeah, right.
So
right.
I usually leave that cliffhanger as, please let me know if this does happen.
Mm-hmm.
So then that way they can see that if I truly have a feeling about it, I really do think it's going to come out some way or another.
Mm-hmm. Does that get frustrating once in a while when you feel like really close to something but you can't quite explain it and this person really isn't understanding?
At first it did, because I couldn't prove it. We're always in this tangible world of proving something in a physical way.
Right.
Okay, so at first it did bother me. But as time went on, I'd say, I don't know how or where this is coming from, so then I try to pinpoint a date around this season, around this time, 5 weeks, the weather's warming, or whatever it is that might gain their focus, so that they can pay attention. She did say when the weather was going to break, or she didn't mention in so many weeks, and it is in this time frame, so that way they can be a little bit more in focus and be in tune to that.
Mm-hmm. Real briefly, I just want to remind everybody that you are listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This program is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My special guest this month is Christina Jimenez, and she is a gifted tarot card reader, and we're talking about tarot cards, which of course makes sense. Now, when you read tarot cards, I know there are certain patterns that you can lay out. Do you go by certain patterns, or do you just draw the cards and just relay whatever comes to you? How do you work with the cards?
At the beginning, as a student, they're taught different layouts and that. But every person is different, and I personally find that too many cards out on a layout is like too many stories. It's like as if I had gone to Target and watched all these televisions going on with different stories
right.
playing.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's too much. So I can only lay out three. For myself, specifically speaking, I can see that in a three-card layout, it'll tell me a storyline. Then I can go to the next three-card layout, and I can get more in focus with it, or it might be some other storyline. But usually on a three-card, that's where I get. And usually when I put the three cards, like you said, cards have specific meanings. But when you put them together, it's kind of like making a sandwich. The bread, the mustard, and the bologna are three different things. But when you put them together, depending on how you put those three things together, is the taste going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
right.
So every time I could get those three cards with say if I read your cards and I got those three cards, and then I can go back and read my boss and get those same three cards, it might not mean the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends on that person and the circumstances they're in.
Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, do you find that the first three cards that you refer to are the most important cards in that reading?
At times, it just all depends. Sometimes people will come and they're greatly worried or something. I feel a pressure with them that they're this main thing. That can anchor things and tell me where they're at that moment. But sometimes, like say for instance, this woman was worried, she got into a car accident, she was worried about the people, if anybody was hurt. Later on, what her big worry was her boyfriend was gonna ask her to marry him. So that took over. It was this anxiousness. That's where the anxiousness came from. Probably it was a fender bender, everybody was fine, but she was really anxious and she carried that to other things. So the big focus really was that whole marriage proposal. Every woman's got one, you know, at a certain point, marriage on the brain. And so,
okay, if you say so, I'll take your word for it.
Anyway, so, the anxiousness was with the bigger focus in her life, which made spread the anxiousness to other things where she was really worried about afterward. Was anyone really hurt? Is there going to be any additional insurance problems, anything like that? But really, what she really was more focused on is if everybody was okay. So I thought that was really a good place to be. I said, everybody's okay, everybody's fine. You can call to later, a few days later, just to make sure everything's okay. But, you know, by and large, her anxiety really was from something bigger. Mm-hmm. So it was, I guess the first three cards could be the anchor, but they're not necessarily telling the full story of that reading.
Mm-hmm. Do you go through the whole deck when you do a reading, or just how many cards do you normally use?
Usually I don't go through the whole deck. Sometimes I do. Sometimes it depends on certain people have certain things on their mind. If you can answer these, it's so funny because a lot of times people will ask me these questions and they'll say, you told me the whole thing in six cards. And I'll say, well, okay, that's great. And I won't charge you as much. But if I answered your question and that's all you wanted, that's fine. But there's some people that also, they have maybe layers of issues with something. And so then it's like peeling off the layers. And mm-hmm. if they're okay with it, I'll say, would you like to keep going on this or would you, you know, prefer? And if they want to keep going, usually I'll say, you know, this anxiety or this came from here and we're going to move forward. And I try to do it carefully because this is something you don't want to bear everything that's really a difficult thing for people. You can see their body language if they're getting really anxious, or say for instance they just recently had a death and the death was so new and fresh and they're just so lost and they're focused, and I can say this person's asking you to stay in the living and you have these things to live for and these are the things that they want to relay to you, then we can go deeper. And then they can agree or disagree. Like, you know, you have that dog. That was his favorite dog. Don't go leaving that dog to somebody else because he would just wouldn't be able to take that. You know, mm-hmm. Chester was his little man,
right.
You know, that kind of thing.
Right,
so.
Right. But what if somebody does start to get upset and maybe they don't want to go any further because they're afraid of what they might hear? Do you stop then? Do you respect their wishes?
Almost definitely. There are times where I can say, you know, this was a very difficult time in your life. And say, for instance, you know, they're battling addictions. And, you know, any addiction is going to be, there's always a trigger that's going to make you want to go back to that. I could say, but you were a different person then. You had other things happen to you. Now you're more matured, and these are the things that you overcame. And it's okay to be there now. This is where you are right now. And this is where we are right now. And so when you say that, I think that's in your complete stranger, that's giving them the license to forgive themselves and say, okay, I can only do this much right now. And I said, and that's perfect. That's perfect for where you're at right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you ever receive information from the cards where you're reluctant to tell somebody something because it could possibly be construed as bad news or anything like that? Has that ever happened to you?
Very many times.
Mm-hmm.
There are some times where you really have to be tactful, and sometimes you can tell that the person just won't be able to take this news. Say, for instance, this person's father is facing dementia, and time is coming very close. And I said, you know, I can say these are the most important times for you. When he is lucid, remind him of this and say that, and is this the time that you need to take? I'm not anything divine, so I wouldn't say that I know exactly when they're going to pass, but sometimes I can get some clue that's going to tell me at a certain time. Now, if I think that person is going to benefit from it, then I will say, well, you know, at this time, you're just going to be working him through this. He's going to be very worried and reluctant to leave, but, you know, at this point, he knows he's leaving the living world. And mm-hmm. some people can handle that. There are other people that I just don't say it. I'll just, like, literally, is there a stapler so I can just close up my mouth because it's going to be too difficult. Mm-hmm. And usually those people come back to me and they'll say, I can understand what you were saying even when you didn't say it.
Right.
So I guess there's a level of tactfulness that you mm-hmm. have to.
Well, what about that person themselves? Maybe you get some kind of impression that there's going to be a serious illness or possible accident. You don't mention that to that person, or are you reluctant to?
I try to mention it in a way that they could benefit. Like, say, for instance, there are people that I've said, do not drive in this area. I see you by train tracks or something like this. Please try to avoid them, especially this time. And they usually will listen to what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Other times where I know that they're health, if they're worried about their health, like they took all these tests and the results haven't come back, and I feel something that's, then I have to say, you know, there's also looking at things differently, maybe second opinion, third opinion, or going through alternative medicine and things like that, so that sometimes with any disease, we can't beat all diseases with positive thinking, but if you look at alternatives, maybe it changes the way you're working, you're doing, but it changes the attitude. Therefore, other things can change along with that.
Mm-hmm. So you might suggest possibly they should see a doctor or something along those lines because you're getting something about their health?
Exactly. I had a boss at one time, and he would always tell me, Christina, what do you see? And I said, you know, I just get this tightening in the chest. What are you doing? Are you still eating those deep-fried onion rings after the doctor told you can't have that, and that kind of thing. And then once he kind of, and I didn't have any cards, and I didn't even know that about him until he asked. And then he was, like, really embarrassed of himself. I said, you know, that's really going to hamper you in a year or so. You're 18 months, and you're going to be, you know, taking a lot of tests and other things. Then he said, okay, so we're going to start off with broccoli, and then we'll work our way. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's a radical change right there for anybody.
Right.
Yeah. But now, when you give a reading and you're going along and you find that you're receiving some type of bad news or potential bad news, do you get upset yourself sometimes?
At the beginning, I did. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of times where you receive so much energy that sometimes you just don't know what to do with it. And it can be negative energy. It could be bad news. At the beginning, I began to absorb it all. And then I would become very anxious. My palms were sweating. And I'm like, wait a minute. My job here is to transfer this information to this person, and so something I'm doing something wrong here. So I started to read up on that and clearing your energy, and it's kind of like when you get to a stage of someone wants to give you advice, either you choose to take it or you choose not to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we get all kind of advice. We get, you know, medical advice. We get just, you know, advice sometimes from our supervisors of how to exceed in this, or maybe we don't want to exceed in it, so we won't do it. So we choose to take advice, and sometimes we choose to back off on it. And sometimes backing off is a good thing. So say for a doting mother that's constantly wants their child to be on honor roll and bang the books and study habits and all these things, and say take a step back and see what they're going to do. Do they really want this? Are you going to spend $30,000 and that this person doesn't even want that? So it's time where you can be able to assess a situation. So sometimes I try to always go to the positive, even if mm-hmm. there's pure negative in it, I always go to the positive. And then after that, I really do a lot of cleansing too. Mm-hmm. So.
But there again, sometimes you say things or you feel things that you really can't control. I mean, you may advise them to stay away from a certain area like you were talking about with railroad tracks. But I'm a firm believer if it's that person's time to go, it's their time to go, and it may not, I mean, maybe they avoid that area you're talking about, but it might be another area where it might happen. There's only so much you can do, right? I mean, but you can advise them as best you can.
Definitely. I think destiny is destiny. What I receive in, and usually it becomes, I can have warning signs, and all of a sudden things come out of the blue that I never even received any warning on.
Right.
So I do believe that's divine destiny right there.
Right.
And I think our jobs are just to advise and warn, and so that person gets to the point in their path that they're supposed to be, and the point that that path changes
right.
is all depending on destiny, mm-hmm. and they have to go from there.
Right. I mean, I think that, well, I would imagine you think of yourself as a conduit sometimes where you're channeling the information to that person. And like you're saying, if it's really something that that person is supposed to experience, maybe you won't get that information to convey to that person. Do you find that to be so once in a while?
Yes. There are times where some things would just be too, I think, devastating. If I were to say, you know, you're going to watch your child suffer from cancer, that would be something that would be so devastating. Usually I won't even get that. I won't even get that warning.
Mm-hmm.
Little by little they'll say, you know, this person, you know, my daughter, my son, you know, we're getting closer, these things. And sometimes I do get to see the beauty in death. I get to see the beauty in how the human changes with the circumstances changing around them. And it's a beautiful thing. And it, and I know sometimes people think, you know, and like say, for instance, I did predict my boss's mother when she was going to pass. At the same time, I was predicting her husband's mother that was going to pass, and they were going to pass at the same time frame but in different countries.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave them both the opportunity to just stay and be with their mothers in the stages that their mothers were in. And their mothers were tired, they had raised their families, they'd seen their all their families have their families and, you know, go off to college and have their careers. And they could see that they were tired now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to be tired. And it's okay, you lived a long life. You look at all the work that you've done. And just to sit there and reflect on it. It's like just reflecting on a sunset.
Right.
You know, and to me, there is beauty in that.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to see everything through. Why is it that we're so happy when
mm-hmm.
we see a baby born? And then we're so in grief. When we, you know, we hear of a person's passing, yes, we're going to miss them, but we have to understand that they're in a better place. They have no more ailments, and this is part of their life, the death and them going to the other life. That is part of life. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think touching on what you said, too, if somebody's really suffering from a tragic illness or whatever, there is beauty in death and the fact that also what you said, they're going to the other side, they won't be going through that pain. They will be feeling much better, and they'll be in a different place, but they'll be in a better place.
Exactly. My boss is very factual. She's got a lot of facts that make her make her, everyday decisions. When I came in, and I said, because I said so, that pretty much was my reasoning. And I said, but at a point, we didn't focus anymore on the facts. We just focused on who was there, when we were there, what we were doing. Every day was a gift. And every day, it was wonderful because I got to meet a beautiful woman, the most beautiful woman. And it was at her last stages of life. And she would tell me, she had, you know, taken a nap, and she said, you know, I met with an angel. And I said, really? And I said, what did she look like? Well, what did he look like? And she said, he was so beautiful. And she just, the story she told me was just so enveloping. I wanted to be there. I wanted to go there. But it was something that she had already herself for. So I think at that point, she wasn't fearing death anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, which made my boss and her siblings not fear this. Like, it's time of letting go and just being peaceful with it. And that sense of just being there and watching the flow, it's like being on a, I don't know, on a boat in the water and just letting the current take you where it's gonna, you're gonna glide and go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that at that point, we didn't focus on, I'm going to have to let her go. I am not ready for her to go. And we're usually not ready for a lot of things that life throws to us when we're just so happy in a certain stage of our lives that we're in, and then here comes life throwing us into another.
Right.
Right.
Well, from some of the reports I've read, many people that experience a near-death experience or have a near-death experience often will say, once they come back, that they're not afraid of dying anymore because they've seen the other side, so to speak, and they know that it's a better place. There are loved ones perhaps waiting on the other side for them, people that love them and appreciate them, and all of a sudden, death doesn't scare them anymore.
I agree with that. Everyone that I've, and at first I thought to myself, man, I really don't want to experience this. I just wanted to give them the news, like you said, be the conduit, give them the news, do whatever they wanted, needed to do. It was just a preparation for them. And literally I wanted to step out, but it seemed like everything was taking, swallowing me in deeper. And when one mom was seriously ill, then the other mom was feeling better. And we were like going both, and it was simultaneous. And it was so beautiful because you could find humor in it. You could find just about anything life throws at you, but be there in the moment. And there were times where I used to just really sit in my car and say, do I have to go into work today? Because I just didn't know what kind of news I was going to receive. But I thought, you know what? Let's go in and see what's going on.
Right.
You
it know? Is so what it is.
It is what it is. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, let's talk about the cards themselves. How are they divided up and how many cards are in a deck?
Okay, on a traditional deck of tarot cards, there's 78 cards to the deck, and there's 22 major arcana, and then you have the minor arcana. The major arcana are usual symbols, and they are to represent life lessons, things that we need to overcome. And we do have, in stages of our lives, things that we have to overcome at every stage in our life. When we're children, we're very young, we're scared, we're terrified of the closet, the dark, the fear. But every stage in our lives, we have different fears. And so as we grow, we overcome certain fears. Maybe we're not afraid of the dark closet anymore or the basement, but now we're afraid of, at my age, maybe a younger person taking my job. We all have fears of every mm-hmm. different kind.
Right.
So when we have a reading, I'll turn over a card and it's a life lesson. And sometimes people think, well, I'm too old, I don't need to have another life lesson, I've just learned them all. And we never stop learning them.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So in that way I can explain, this is what you're encountering right now, and this is what your maybe challenge is to rethink that or look at it and modify that idea to and apply it to the lifestyle that you're in now.
Mm-hmm.
So our fears change, all our challenges change, and they're constantly changing. So depending on,
right. Well, that's life right there.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's the difference between the major arcana and the minor?
Okay. As I previously I mentioned that the major arcana are life lessons, representations. Then the minor arcana would be a suit of, just like a regular deck of cards. You have your four suits, and those represent in nature the fall, the winter, the spring, and the summer. Also, if you look at a regular deck of cards, there's spades, there's diamonds, there's hearts, and there's, what's the last one?
Well, there's clubs, diamonds, hearts, and I'm not a card player myself. So
okay.
Spades, I think, is it?
Okay. And so those represent different things. So literally, once you start reading cards with a tarot deck and then you go back to regular cards, playing cards, you can actually read off of them. They all have representations. Mm-hmm. So say, for instance, swords would be considered diamonds, and those have to do with... I'm trying to think of this in a positive way. Mm-hmm. It could be in like if the negative sense would be altercations, conflict. But I look at it as challenges because we always have challenges, no matter what. They could be positive or negative, but we always have challenges. So and then there's hearts that would have to do with human relationships. in any way, shape, or form. We have relationships with our bosses. We have relationships with our neighbors. We have love relationships with man and woman. And we have love relationships with our children, our nephews and nieces, and the outer line community. So then we have that. And I guess you could call the pentacles would be, that would have to do with money. That would have to do with currency and that type of thing. So that would have to do with anything economic in your economic state around you and how you want to, say, for instance, if you're going to college, what do you want to do, focus in on, what's going to be your mainstay, what's going to keep you going. And the last one would be wands, and wands would have to do with opportunities. We always think of it as economic opportunities, but we also have like an opportunity that I'm getting to have right now, which is to be able to discuss the tarot cards and intuition, and hopefully maybe it'll spark some intuition in all of us so that we can be more aware of our surroundings and be more open to each other as humans and to our outlying community. And so opportunities can come in any way, shape, or form. And everyone has an opportunity, from a little baby to an older person. We all have different opportunities, and it's what we do with them or choose not to do with them. Some have to do with our destiny. And then sometimes we get confined in life. Oh, I would love to have been a pilot, but my vision was always wrecked from very, young. So we're usually in our destiny. There are certain things that are confining us, and there are certain things that we naturally either will choose or choose to bypass.
Mm-hmm.
So in that, when we're mixing the major arcana, which is the life lessons, and we're mixing all those other elements, as well as we can chain those to the time of year as well, then we can go along seeing what life lessons are there for us to really key into, and at the same time, what could we benefit from with relationships, with economic growth, or for some personalities, economic growth is not a good thing because then it can take us into a negative place.
Right.
So
right.
That's what the mixture, I would have to say, would be with the major arcana and the minor arcana.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, like you say, everything that changes alters everything. And, you may wish for a certain thing, but you never know. If that thing came to pass, everything else would change, and maybe you would end up in the worse place than you are now, or whatever the case might be. So you never know what is going to happen once you put things in motion.
Exactly. And usually what I try to focus on is, like, say for instance, this person is waiting for their ship to come in. They've done everything. They've gone to school. They've taken internships. They've done everything they could, and nothing's happening. So usually I'll say, well, maybe this isn't the way it's supposed to happen. Or maybe that education, that experience, and everything is going to take you into a different field.
Mm-hmm.
There could be teaching in the medical community. Those crisscross. And so everything has this tendency to crisscross. But when we go to school, we have one track, and we're on that track, and we're just waiting to get off that track so we can have the paper and say, we need to do this. And we do. I mean, without it, we would be medically, or with the medical community or education community, that kind of thing. But things can crisscross, and sometimes I can better say that education wasn't for naught. You're just going to apply it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And this might have a way bigger economic benefit than you even expected.
Right.
So then it gives them a different way, ray of hope.
Right. You give them alternatives. Because I imagine the example you used, if someone wanted to be a pilot, but maybe their vision is not quite right, I'm sure you could advise them to, I don't know, maybe design airplanes or become a aircraft mechanic or something to do with planes anyway, even though it's not quite what they had in mind. Do you often do that?
Exactly. There's a saying, those who can't teach, usually.
And those that can't teach, teach Jim. No,
anyway, okay, we're not
ahead.
Going there.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway. I was just going to stop at the beginning.
All right.
Okay, so, and that's usually it is. It's usually that passion that takes people to a different level, to where they know that they couldn't do that. But if I could, I would do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
Or usually they'll find the talent in the group that they are teaching and say, I know that you can do this, and this is the idea. And if they share that same passion, it can just break barriers and boundaries with everything that we do in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Do you shuffle the cards yourself, or do you have your customer or your client shuffle them and pick them out? How does that work?
I tend to ask the client to shuffle the cards so that I can receive their energy. Usually, I try to be step back and take the lesser of the, I'm just trying to be that conduit. So usually I want more of their energy, anything that they can give me. But I don't really necessarily want them to tell me. I can't, you know, I don't want Mike Holloway to come in and say, well, I just got fired. That would be kind of obvious. So I'd ask Mike to shuffle the cards and say, oh my goodness, you just had the worst time of it, but there's a silver lining. You didn't want this job anyway, and you can still draw from your pension or whatever, and you can get to do what you want to do. And then people will say, oh, that's right, I did want that. I did that. That would have been a little dream of mine. So usually the more energy that I have from them, and usually when they're touching objects and usually the cards, that's when I can receive that energy to be able to open that up.
Mm-hmm. So that does come in handy once in a while.
Oh, yes, mm-hmm. Most definitely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when you actually do a reading, they pick the three cards that they want read, or is that you pick the cards themselves? Or?
Oh, I naturally just, this is very random, so mm-hmm. that nothing's prescribed or preordained. I wouldn't want anyone to think that, oh, okay, she just kind of slotted these at the top. Usually when the client would shuffle them, only they know what was done to
right.
those cards. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we start to draw, and I start to draw those three pictures, you know, those three cards for my first little idea there, the first, I guess, picture story, then I can already say, you know, you're feeling your energy is just really at this point, you're, you know, and that kind of anchors that person. And sometimes you need to feel validated. Well, you just got fired. You should feel bad. You know, you should feel like they didn't see my work, all those feelings need to come up and you need to let them go so that they could just like bubbles popping. I say, you know, when it's negative things, just let those bubbles pop and go away so that you can not lose focus to where you wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right. I would imagine that helps to advise them what their next course of action may be. Like you said, maybe there's something else better waiting for them. It's hard to say sometimes, right, at the beginning when they first come to you. Is that correct?
Exactly. Sometimes we think that if we prepared, we can prepare 90% and that 10% is destiny. And then there are times where, you know, I never expected myself to be a delivery man for this, but I get to see people, I get to enjoy myself, I made connections with whatever, and that kind of thing. So a lot of times destiny has to have that that part to play in it. And I can guide them only so much. And I always try to give people a little, I don't know, I'm not sure how to explain it, a little sense of this anticipation, but also I do tell them I'm 90% accurate, so that 10% is going to play in there. It all depends on what you do. Do you take this job? Do you take that? Do you go to all the interviews? Do you get a flat tire and not be able to go to the one interview, and that's what set you in that course? So that's that 10% that can, and we always have to remember as well, as this is going on, the world is just rotating, and as that rotating, that energy that changes things shifts as well. So we have to consider all these things happening at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you give a reading, again, working with that person, and something comes up, like I know many people have the fear of the number 13, or they think it's bad luck. 13 is not necessarily bad, right?
Correct. People always say, for instance, in the major arcana, there's a death card, and people always see that. Oh, they get so worried. I said, death does not mean physical death in that sense. And I said, you can look it up on the internet, wherever, anywhere you want to go. It has to do with cycles ending.
Mm-hmm.
So it could have been the death of your daughter going to middle school. It could
right.
be the death of anything.
Right.
And
it's
cycles
just change.
And cycles change all the time. And I said, you know, and you got tired of waiting for her in the parking lot forever anyway. So there are times where they can see, I said, there's a lot of, sometimes I can get three different cards that could have to do with death, but mm-hmm. not death. And there's one for the world, and the world is changes. That means cycles change, ending, and new cycles beginning. So I can say, oh, so you ended up, you know, finished up with this course of schooling, now you're going to something else. So then they're not so fearful of that inevitable death. That death thing and 13 and all those things, people just, they almost want to lock up. I can see their faces drawing.
Right. And, yeah. And they, oh my God, this is it. Yes. Well, you know, again, for the layman, they may not know that kind of thing. And once again, I just want to briefly mention that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This program is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My guest this month is Christina Jimenez. She's a gifted tarot card reader, and that's what we're talking about. Do you ever give your own self a tarot card reading, or do you feel that you're a little too close to it, so you may go to somebody else to have it done, or how does that handle it? I mean, how do you handle it in that respect?
Yes and no, and I'll explain that. At the very beginning, I used to measure things, sort of like a meter, if you will, on the day's events to just pretty much say what's going on here. Say, for instance, I wanted my plumbing work done, which actually happened, and I thought, today's the day that they're going to find something wrong, and I won't have to look at these men, and I won't have to be polite for the, I don't know, umpteenth day, okay? And so they're going to find that, and I'll draw a few cards, and it's like, yay, they're going to find it, or we're going to be there. There are times where there are certain difficulties where I know that my emotions would want to play, and I would want it to be a certain way.
Right. You want to see certain cards come up when you might, you know, jockey it a little bit so that those cards might come up, or you keep going until you find a similar card that's positive or whatever it may be. And I guess you're just not being, you're a little too biased in that you want a good outcome, obviously, but there again, you have to go to somebody else possibly that is not wrapped up in whatever personal situation you're in, so they can be a little more objective.
Exactly, and we all need objectivity. No matter what, I could say, oh, don't I look great in this? And, you know, and that whole,
yeah, right.
Let's not go there, you know.
Yeah. But well, you know, any gentleman would say, oh, yes, you look great in that. Or, you know, a friend or whoever, they don't want to hurt your feelings, you know.
But then we always have our mothers that said, what, did you not have a mirror this morning? How could you have gone out that way? So we do need objectivity. It kind of measures and it meters us in every way. And sometimes I'll go to another reader and have this difficult. I had a difficult situation with my daughter. Maybe I was too hard on her, but I guess whatever the situation was so important to me that I had to show the specific reason why this was so important. So sometimes this person might say, well, you're a little hard on her, but then again, she knows how you are anyway, but she gets the point, Mom. So don't go into it any further. Don't go for a round two, another discourse. So then that's when I know, sit on my hands. Don't mm-hmm. do anything else. My work is done. I've done it and let it meld just like that spaghetti sauce. You just got to let it sit there and simmer.
Mm-hmm. So anytime a personal situation comes up, you generally go to somebody else. Is there one or two or three readers you go to on a regular basis if you need answers?
When I really need answers, I try to find random people that I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just so not objective at all. They don't even
right.
know me at all, and mm-hmm. so they're just going to say it. And I find that to be the best. There are certain times where I notice certain people have a gift. Like, we all have focuses. Some people are better at people that have passed. Some people are more in focus with that. Some people are more in focus with details. Other people are just content. So depending on the situation, will I go to that person? I tend to also, when I go on vacation, no matter what country I'm in, I'll tend to go and seek that out. Because,
really?
Yes, most definitely. Mm-hmm. I learned that trick when I, at first I lived in Japan at one point. And there someone just came up randomly and just explained to me all these things that I shouldn't have done that in destiny I already did. And a gentleman said, why are you married now? You had no business being married at this age. You weren't supposed to. And I thought, oh, geez, sorry, but I can't undo it. I'm looking at my two kids. What am I going to do? So little by little, that was my destiny, and that's what I drew out. So then I had to go to Europe on a study, and I sought that out. And at first, at the time that I was seeking this out, it seemed a little bit taboo for other cultures and stuff like that. But it's old as, you know, humanity.
Right.
And so the more I did, the more at ease I was. And I didn't feel, a lot of times people can say, well, I feel that that person was a little critical. They don't even know me. How could they be critical
right.
of me? So then I just took it in stride. And I thought, well, okay, well, destiny's going to have a way of showing me what I'm where I'm supposed to be.
Right.
So that's what I tend to do. If I go down south, I look for some reader and just go on in and say, what's going on? And they'll tell me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I try to, you know, just get any other people of different cultures, age levels, young, old, just every, you know, everybody in humanity, they've got a different way of seeing things.
Right. So the cards are universal.
Correct. They're as old as in my first theology class that they were the tool that was used to choose the first popes. So that was used, I think, with the by the third popes, and then they stopped doing that. But if you look that up, you'll find that to be true.
That's interesting.
Yes, and so they are an old tool. And that's documented. So you want to go back how far? They're very, very ancient. So as well as other tools, you know, before paper, there were other things that were used. So it's just a part of, I think, our humanity.
Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you, how could they do so?
Well, I could just give them my phone number.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, that's 313-970-3047.
Well, there you go. Now, also, how long does a reading last typically?
It depends. If a person just wants a specific answer, it's very quick. I can do 10-minute readings. There's 20-minute readings. It's really what the person feels. Sometimes they'll say, okay, I booked a time for 40 minutes, but I gave them the answer within 10. I'm not here to just take money and soak the whole idea. Whatever the questions are, the information that they want, and I have it right then and there, I'm willing to give it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a question of economics. It's a question of you need answers. I'm the person to give them to you.
Mm-hmm. So they might ask for a half-hour reading, but if you can cut to the chase in 10 minutes, you do so?
Yes, and then I usually ask them, is there anything else that you wanted to know, or did you want me to get more in-depth with what we've discussed? And they said, no, pretty much you took care of everything with the first 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Generally, how often do people come back to you to get a reading? Maybe once a month, every 6 months? How long?
It kind of depends. It's usually seasonal, I find it. Usually, say, at the beginning of the year, people want to know, like in December, they just want a reading before that New Year ball hits, okay? After that, usually, it's usually seasonal. So I won't see them for about 3 or 4 months, unless there's something really challenging coming up, like I have three
right.
job offers or something specific.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
So everybody wants to know who their soulmate's going to be and where they're going to meet that person, right? Or I'm sure you get a lot of that, right?
Oh, yes. You would not believe. But it's interesting the way I can say, nope, it ain't him, before she even sat down. And she's looking at me with her purse in tow. And I said, it's so not even him.
Mm-hmm.
You've enjoyed each other and grown, but that wasn't it.
Right. So you've really said that to people? And what if they balk at that and they say, no, this person is the one for me, and I don't think you're correct. And then you just say, well, do what you want, but, you know, good luck.
That's the underlying sentiment, actually, Mike. But I don't usually put it in those terms. Usually I'll say, this person is on your path. You guys are together on this path to learn from each other for a certain period of time. At a certain point, that's going to break off because he's going to a path and you're going to another path. The path that you're at is going to be this, and I'll explain little hidden things they'll see along the way. This person could be this way. They could be older. They could be whatever. Maybe have the same interest in study or something, or you're going to meet them in another country when you go to study or something like that, so that they can see. It's not that I'm telling you have to sever this relationship. I said, this is a good relationship. It's a friend. It's everything. And I said, but navigating through it, you'll come to see that you're going to be like the frog on the lily pad, that you're going to jump off at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
After a while, it won't.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. I've really enjoyed talking to you, Christina. Very interesting. Thank you for being on the show today.
Well, thank you for having me, Mike. This was so fun. This is like one of my bucket list things. So
well, that's great.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Once again, I want to thank my special guest for this month, Christina Jimenez, and she's a gifted tarot card reader. Very interesting.
Mountain Stage, the internationally distributed weekly 2-hour live performance.
The views and opinions expressed on the following pre-recorded show do not necessarily represent those of WHFR or Henry Ford Community College.
WHFR Dearborn. WHFR, the station making waves, proudly presents The Best of Broadway, a program featuring the best of American musical theater. Good afternoon and welcome. I'm Joe, your host. We've taken care of your tickets. Now let me escort you through 2 hours of enjoyment of the best of Broadway. Welcome once again to The Best of Broadway. I'm Joe, your host here. Today's play, one of the great ones of all time, is Showboat by Jerome Kern and Oscar Hammerstein II. Showboat opened on December 27, 1929 in New York. And the particular version we're doing today was done in 1971 in London's Adelphi Theater. This Showboat was such a significant play in that it became also... it was a serious drama in the midst of musical accompaniment. Prior to that, it was known as musical comedy, but it was kind of very not much depth in the story. But this is a very important story. It's based on Edna Ferber's 1926 novel. It did not at first seem to fit then the current climate of Broadway theater. As a story, it was neither sweet nor frivolous. The musical has two unhappy marriages, hardship of everyday living for black people in the South, a woman of mixed blood in love